your skills regardless of the outcome.
Yes.
That don't look good. What did you do?
My entire life.
Are you sure?
With that accent. Your entire life? What did you see? Where do you think all those soldiers were marching to, lady?
What are you gonna do?
I wish you could live to see the world we made.
You ain't gonna kill this old lady. Come on now. Come on now. You ain't gonna do that.
Oh no!
Hey yo!
Man.
She's a prune! She got prune!
She's gonna do something bad. She's gonna call the cops and some kids in her front yard. Like,
I know they're up to no good. Bring your guns!
Oh my god! She's like dried out. She got like dried out. Yo, Arthur Harrow is he's a freak.
She should have stopped driving me maybe way earlier and then just start plowing through a schoolyard or something like that.
Who knows how many people she
avoided
run over?
Avoided some real bad shit. Or will.
We definitely
dodged a bullet with that
Phew,
one.
Thanks,
oh
Arthur.
Man, oh man. Welcome back to New Rockstars. Moon Knight Episode 1 proves that even golden girls can have their worst days ahead of them. But unlike cult leaders MT and I have been suckered into following, Arthur Harrow's got the true Egyptian demon powers to back up the Kool-Aid. God damn it! We found it! I think we found it. We went up to God damn it.
God damn it. We got it. We got past God the censor. It's fine.
Damn it. This is Inside Marvel. It's New Rockstar's after show for Marvel's Moon Knight on Disney Plus. I'm Eric Voss. I'm here with MT.
Dude, I think that old lady might need some medical assistance. She's not looking too good.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, she's looking a lot more drier than she first appeared.
Losing a bit of color, looking like, WandaVision Episode 1 a little bit.
Oh, for sure.
Just black and white.
Also, the WandaVision finale with those witches when they got sucked out.
How about the Vision's finale in Infinity War? Kind of gray. A little gray and dead.
I think that's the best one there. Yeah, 100%. She's 100% dead there.
General thoughts for this first episode, MT. What was your feelings coming out of this?
Dude, like, it was obviously, like, it's a little bit of a slow start because, like, we don't see Moon Knight straight out the gate. But the ending of this episode gave me so many goosebumps that I had to rewatch it over and over again because, like, this is one of the best intros to a Marvel hero that we've ever gotten, in my opinion. Like, my God. Like, so badass. But what'd you think?
Some of the best character development I think we've ever seen in the MCU. Some of the best acting we've ever seen in the MCU from Oscar Isaac. Good Lord. Amazing casting here. And I love the fact that we start with Ethan Hawke, starting with this creepy cult villain from the get-go. One of my favorite introductions to a different side of the world. There's so much mystery. The more you dig back into this episode, you realize, wait, there's so much to question.
Right.
So many loose ends. So many little sub-mysteries that pop up. We're going to talk about all of them in this episode. In our first of this Moon Knight After Show series. So let's dig into it. This first episode introduces us to Ethan Hawke as the cult leader Arthur Harrow jamming out to some Bob Dylan Christ rock while lining his sandals with broken glass. This guy's the real deal. Never brings
so
it up.
So gruesome. So gruesome.
Yeah.
I
never
cringe
even winces.
So hard.
Never even winces. Now, it's fascinating that we start with this guy, especially the fact that he's Arthur Harrow, a nobody villain from the Moon Knight comics. It's made us all think that he might be revealed to be someone else. He might have some kind of additional identity revealed later on, or he just might not be exactly the name Arthur Harrow. We'll find out. But Oscar Isaac, we begin with him playing the awkward, bumbling Stephen Grant, a British loser who thinks he has a sleepwalking problem. He's really an ancient history nerd. He calls his mom on the phone. We don't hear the mom talking, so who knows if there is anyone on the other end
there.
He's got a fish Gus with just one fin, like Nemo. I love how they call that out later in the episode. He's nodding off to sleep. Obviously, he has some kind of sleep condition, but he works in a London museum gift shop with the bully, Donna, who's just all over
him. The worst. Literally the worst. Like, come on, Donna. Like, give him a break. Come on.
Come on, Donna. And then the security guard who won't remember his name, but he's making some connections with some other employees. He's got a date set up. He's a vegan, but
I mean, he's still Oscar Isaac at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, the guy doesn't even need to open his mouth.
Exactly.
Just get a shot of Duke Leto Atreides from that side angle, leaning back in the
seat. Like the corpse.
That's all I need.
Don't even gotta be alive.
MT and Voss reveal themselves as necrophiliacs.
It was bound to happen. It was bound to happen.
Bound to happen. He talks to a gold-painted street performer. It's apparently his best friend.
Therapist.
He straps his leg at night to try to stay awake, but then he wakes up face down in the Alps, running from gunmen, trying to recover a golden scarab artifact with Egyptian hieroglyphics that he stole from them from one of their castles that are all over the Alps. And then Steven runs down to the village where he sees Arthur Harrow with a gathering of his cult, performing this creepy judgment ritual using the tattoo of Amit Scales to judge their past, present, and future morality. This old woman fails the test, gets her life force sucked out.
Whoops.
This leads to an epic chase, Steven going in and out of consciousness, where he wakes up, like, brutally savaging his pursuers.
Yeah, killed a couple of people.
Taking them out with logs, all from behind the wheel of a cupcake delivery truck. Exciting, exciting sequence here.
Taking a cue from a WandaVision, just completely demolishing things in a truck. What's her face? Darcy the Hayward.
Yeah, for sure. He wakes up from this mountain road thinking it was all a dream, but then he just notices these little glitches in the Matrix. Like, the fish's fin has grown back. Several days have passed, causing him to miss the date. He orders his steak medium well, just well done, right? Which is just painful to see. Order a filet. Well done. I can't handle that.
Listen,
that
was, man, I always order my meat well done. I'm one of those people. I have to make sure all the bacteria is dead, Eric. I have to make sure the
meat's cooked. You're ruining the steak. Just promise me, if you order a well-done steak, just make it like a New York strip. Don't get a ribeye. Don't go for the nicer cuts. Because you're just not getting, you're not going to fully appreciate it.
All right, you're right. I'll give it a try.
No, you don't have to change what you do. This is just me projecting my opinions on the way you want to eat your food. Don't listen to me. This is just how I react. Anyway, I'd eat it raw. I would just bite a cow if I could. But they bite back. Mid-moo. They would bite me back. They have. And they will again, according to him. So he also realizes in his home, there's this crawl space. He finds this burner phone. It's got Layla's number on it. Layla calls him Mark. He's like, who the hell is Mark? Mark starts talking to him in the mirror. Then he starts getting stalked by the ghostly Khonshu. It freaks him out. Harrow tracks him down to the museum, lectures him about Amit's power. If only Amit were around, we could have stopped Hitler. Mm-hmm. We could have stopped Pol Pot. We could have stopped the Armenian genocide.
What was Amit doing, honestly?
Yeah. Why? Where was Amit? Where was Amit then? He tries to actually judge Mark, but the scales never balance, which I thought was super interesting. And then later that night, the demonic jackal chases Mark through the museum into the bathroom, where Steven listens to his alter ego Mark in the mirrors. I love the cinematography of the mirrors.
Yes. And
the different reflections that were either appearing in the mirrors or suddenly reflections disappearing from the mirrors. Things that were happening in real life, but not in the mirror reflection. Just a lot of great direction there.
Yes.
And then Steven surrenders to the warrior of Moon Knight, who beats that jackal so savagely that a bunch of white people and stand-up comedians are going to demand Oscar give up his Oscar. I had to work it in.
Oh my God, that jackal shouldn't have said that shit, Eric. He shouldn't have said it.
He should have kept it out of his effing mouth. Anyway, the question we're going to talk about here, how exactly Arthur Harrow's powers work, the powers of Amit. Does this mean that Amit can see into the future for all of us and has powers over our destiny? Or is this whole judgment of people's souls, is it all bullshit at the end of the day? How much of what we're seeing is really real?
Can you gaze into the future?
It's a future he can see. Those crocodiles are just blinking and doing the raven.
It's like, open. Oh my god.
We need Raven on this show.
Seriously, let's get Raven on Rogue Theory. Why not?
Raven just grabs her wrist and then sucks her life out. Like, I'm sorry you can't be here to see the world we create.
My God.
One of the best ways you can support us here at New Rockstars is by grabbing some merch over at newrockstarsmerch.com. They have the brand new Moon Knight Latest Obsession shirt, Tomb of the Moon God. Ooh. It's a cool shirt design. And when you buy it, you're going to get the chance to pay for a shout out that will run during the upcoming Inside Marvel episodes. Now, we don't have those shout outs yet because, you haven't bought the shirts yet. You haven't done it yet. But once you do it next week, you're going to see all kinds of crazy shit that people write here. MT and I are going to shout out a couple of them, respond to you, answer your questions, shut down your theories, or say that's a great idea. You will get MT's judgment here, right now. But
just pure bald Haitian judgment right here. Just bring in your questions on the Latest Obsession shirt immediately.
Yeah, we'll have a tattoo on our arms of just two different MT heads back to back. Yeah. Out, just like,
that's the first tattoo I'll get. It's going to be just me judging others.
And the last tattoo. It's the only tattoo I get. Well, anyway, head on over to newrockstarsmerch.com. Check out that Latest Obsession shirt and all the other great Moon Knight items like this hoodie's that on
yes. It's great. Love that great hoodie on you, bro. Looking good.
MT, what's our first question coming out of this episode of Moon Knight?
Eric, it's the main question here, I feel. How the hell do the powers of Arthur Harrow and Amit even work?
Yeah, really the most curious part of this premiere was the whole Judgment of Amit ritual that Arthur Harrow places on his cult followers. He balances the cane on their palms. And that cane, by the way, is topped with the back-to-back crocodile heads. Right. Crocodiles being the head of Amit, the Egyptian mythological demon beast who devours the souls who are judged by Anubis to be unworthy. Amit has the head of a crocodile, the front body of a lion, and the hind quarters of a hippo.
Thick! Too thick, Amit, god dang!
You hate to see Amit come, but you love to watch Amit. Is this disrespectful? I think it might be disrespectful. I don't know. This is an ancient pagan religion. Is anyone really worshiping?
I don't know. This is a compliment, if anything. I would never smack a god if they appeared in front of me. That would be nice.
And you know what? No one worships Amit. They fear Amit. Exactly. Amit is like the beast. It's not like one of the gods in the Ennead. Anyway, but the Kang. We're getting to Kang. We're not there yet.
Not yet, but we're getting it soon.
The cane swings back and forth like a pendulum between the judge person and Harrow. I just love the blocking of all this, by the way. Yes. I love it when just like little simple things can just be like maneuvered that way. And it just feels so like ancient and like you can imagine all these people being like, yes, do it, chanting. While the cane swings, the arm tattoo activates. The tattoo shows the double croc heads holding scales in their mouths. Now, MT, I found this really interesting because in Egyptian mythology, it is not Amit who does the judging. It's Anubis. Ooh. Anubis holds the scales weighing your heart against the weight of a feather. Mm. And if your heart weighs more than the feather, then you're going to Amit. But the fact that Amit now holds the scales in her mouth reflects how in the eyes of Harrow and his followers, Amit deserves to be the sole judge and jury and executioner. Take Anubis out of the process. Because this way, you don't have to wait for the sinful to commit their sins. You can, kind of like in Minority Report, stop the criminals in their tracks before they get to harming others. Mm. Before that old lady gets to plow on her Buick through the playground. Exactly. Now, the tattoo seesaws until it bounces out and turns green for a worthy soul, or it tips to one side and turns red for our dear old unworthy grandmother. Her
soul
sucked out. And when Stephen got a glimpse of her, she looked like a lifeless gray corpse, kind of like someone halfway through a sip from the wrong Holy Grail. Like, she chose poorly. Or will choose poorly. Mm-hmm. Now, we actually see Harrow's tattoo moving both in the Alps and in the London Museum. So it's not just like in the possible dream reality. It's in what is presented as objective reality. Safe to assume that Harrow's powers are real, at least as real as anything from Steven's perspective at the moment, which is something we should absolutely question as we move ahead. We'll get to that question. But the episode also opens from the objective point of view, showing Arthur putting the broken glass in his sandals, broken glass that he walks around upon for every step, which I just think was this episode's way of proving to us that Harrow is the real deal. He's not right. just a showman.
Right.
Like, he's not a snake oil Mysterio type trickster. He has some kind of real power.
Yeah, because like, he's not bleeding at all. Like, not at all.
He's not. Now, it could just be the guy's got thick skin feet. Or he's
calluses. Just all foot calluses.
He's got what Peter Jackson had the Hobbit actors wear. Just like foot shoes.
Oh, know? Yeah, like Captain America 1. Like, Chris Evans has to run around in those little fake shoes.
He's got a hold of some of those, and then but it's only for us to make it to trick us. I don't think so. I think the idea is that this guy's got some real powers to him. One thing I want to point out, MT, is that this is one of many recent examples of MCU characters running afoul of some cosmic legal system that they previously didn't know existed. Remember, Loki and Sylvie were similarly prosecuted for future violations of destinies that they didn't know so were scripted out for them by the TVA and He Who Remains, aka Kang. Doctor Strange is getting dragged before some mysterious judicial body akin to Marvel's Illuminati. Characters in What If were judged by the Watcher for the mistakes that they made, or in some cases given second chances, lighter sentences. Cersei and the other Eternals are facing the judgment of Ereshkigal the Judge based on some other cryptic divine code. I just think there's a reason so many of the MCU titles are pointing in this godly legal direction. They're obviously linked, at least thematically, and perhaps there's some kind of cosmic accords scripted by some panel of VIPs that we'll learn about a lot more soon. Specifically, I think there could be a link between Amit and King Pharaoh Ramatut, aka Kang, which I plan to explore more in an upcoming video. But for Amit to arrive at a final judgment for anyone means that Amit is in agreement with He Who Remains and Loki that people's future decisions are pre-scripted out for them and that nothing we do can change that destiny. However, Amit was unable to judge Stephen Grant, which is probably because he has multiple identities inside of his subconscious, and each of those identities might have different destinies. That could make Steven's very existence in violation of a code prescribed by Amit and He Who Remains, and that Steven could exist as a kind of multiversal, dare I say, nexus being in this reality, one who fits in better with a multiverse of possibilities. But really, the question I have, MT, is this the case because Mark/Steven have dissociative identity disorder, or is this because Khonshu is possessing them? Is the show saying that these two are the same thing? Would that uncertain judgment happen for anyone who had DID?
I think that, when we see Harrow and Mark having this, or I should say Steve, having their conversation in the museum, he says that Steve has chaos inside of him. And like, I made a video about this in the past, but I really do feel like chaos magic or chaos energy is a factor in this show. It's going to be a huge factor moving forward. And I think that because of this chaos magic, in this chaos energy, it's able to flip Mark's brain into having two separate identities. So like, because like you said, he has these two identities, the tattoo is like, I can't really make a judgment on these two people. I'm only one tattoo. You're gonna have to make another tattoo for two people, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I was very confused. So yeah, I feel like this, it's more than just a your normal DID type of situation. I think this is like a cosmic sort of like influenced DID type of situation that could be happening here. But what do you think?
Yeah, I don't want to speak out of turn in describing the symptoms and the nature of dissociative identity disorder, right, which is a real disorder. It used to be called split personalities or multiple personalities disorder. The technical term now is dissociative identity disorder, because it's not like your brain is split or broken necessarily. It's just that you disassociate in and out of different identities in different forms that exist in your subconscious, and that each of them have specific characteristics, specific ways of talking. They've done a lot of research in the show, apparently, to talk to mental health experts and how this actually works. And you can tell Oscar Isaac has really done the homework. But the thing is I think the show definitely needs to answer that question, because I think the answer needs to be that Khonshu has cursed Mark in a specific way that is unique. And that we aren't making a sweeping statement about everyone suffering from dissociative identity disorder. I think Arthur Harrow was so surprised to see the scales not reach a conclusion, that must mean that Mark is a unique case, that Khonshu's possession of Mark is what caused his condition. But we don't really know if he had this before or not. We'll talk about that a bit later. But I think the conclusion that we should draw here, for now at least, is that Amit has real power. This is an example of another god that exists in the MCU. In the same way that, you know, the Thor movies established that the Norse gods are actually real gods that exist in the cosmos, that the legends that we heard throughout mankind and human history were based on real people. The Eternals made the same kind of thesis statement, right? That characters like Icarus and Athena, you know, are all based on real people that existed, or real beings that existed. So I think the idea is that...
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
In the MCU, we're going to learn that every being of mythology had some kind of root in some superheroic figure from history or someone with real power. I like the idea that we're going to meet all the gods at some point. I mean, I don't think they'll ever cross that road and say that Jesus Christ is a god who is based on some superhero.
You don't think we're going to see Jesus in Thor 4? You don't think that's going to happen? Jesus versus Gore?
I mean, maybe they'll link something like Adam Warlock as like a Christ figure or
right,
something like that. Like,
he was very much
your legends of Jesus is actually Adam Warlock. And then everyone will get pissed off. People will lose their minds.
New churches would be built, Eric.
Oh, yeah. I think the closest they'll get, to be honest, is Mephisto. Like, I think the Christian devil will realize is actually based on stories about this godly demon figure, Mephisto. But yeah, I think the idea is that, like, Amit's powers are real insofar as anything we are seeing is real. Again, I think all of what we're seeing in either the realities that Steven / Mark are bouncing in and out of, I don't know if we could trust any of it yet. In the same way that, like, they describe this as Fight Club, which is, like, famously a story that, you know, the reality presented to you is actually through an unreliable narrator.
Right.
So, yeah, I think we need to be definitely on the lookout here for some red flags where things that are presented to us as just normal baseline reality might.
And, like, you know, like, something really fishy happened at the end of the first episode where, like, when Steve, I keep wanting to call him Mark. He's not Mark. He's Steve. When Steve gets off the bus, he sees Harrow on the bus, like, as the bus drives away. So, like, is Harrow even real? Like, is that just in his mind? Like, what the heck was that about? Like, why didn't Harrow kill him?
That's weird. And, like, we don't really know how Steven got on that bus because he wakes up already on the bus. Was he stalking Harrow? Was Harrow stalking him? Were they in the same... Because it looked like a connecting bus with, like, different parts to
right.
it. Did Harrow not know that Mark was... Or Steven was on the bus until Steven got off to look at him? Like, I think it was presented to us in that moment as, like, Steven's kind of losing his mind, that things that were part of his dream are actually part of his world, and that Harrow is as much of a specter as Mark Specter, or as much as a specter as Khonshu is.
Oh yeah, Khonshu, he's just everywhere. Lurking about like a creep this episode. Yeah. Oh my god, so tall.
So creepy, right? I love the design of Khonshu. Like,
yes.
Another thing that they just pulled directly from the pages of the comics that just looks so good.
I never thought that I would be as creeped out by Khonshu in real life, but, like, it just makes sense. He's just a really creepy looking dude, and, like, it's just bones.
The movement. The yes. movement, the way he like lurches forward, like, those long steps.
He's like, get the fuck out of here, Steve.
The weird wisps of things are just floating behind him. Yeah. Like his hair, he's got this weird cobwebby hair that just pokes out. Like the little details that bring Conch to life. Incredible. Incredible. Well, there's a lot more to talk about from Moon Knight, but first we want to thank some people who helped us make this episode. Thanks to our friends Geology for sponsoring this episode. Moon Knight has had it bad. Between insomnia and late night fights, there's no sleep. Get this man some eye cream and skincare routine. He's not alone. 50% of the guys suffer from under eye issues like the dark under eye circles, puffiness, tired eyes, fine lines, wrinkles. This is where Geology comes in. Skincare shouldn't feel like a gamble. All Geology's products are made with scientifically proven ingredients trusted by dermatologists and cosmetic chemists. Start with a complete trial set, a 30-day supply of face wash, Vital Morning Face Cream, Repairing Night Cream, and Nourishing Eye Cream. Includes two bottles of face wash, one for the sink and one for the shower, or to take with you to the gym. The part we like about Geology is they do the hard work of finding the right products for you and just have you get to use them. Their mantra is, make handsome a habit, which is way better than saying, make tired eyes a habit. Make handsome a habit. So head on over to geology.com and take their free skincare quiz to save up to 50% off your first 30 days trial, or just click the link in the description. That's geology.com, or click the link below to save 50% off on your 30-day trial. And speaking of sleep, you might lose some shut-eye due to the crime fighting, but you don't want to miss out on rest because of a bad mattress. That's why we love our Helix mattresses. Yes,
so much.
Helix Sleep has a quiz that matches your body type and your sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. They have soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattress is great for cooling you down if you sleep hot. Even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-size sleep.
The Helix Plus mattress is the best. I sleep on that every night. It's the best.
Yeah, MT loves his. I got a Helix mattress. I love mine. It feels like MT and I are sleeping on the same mattress, connected through some kind of cosmic rift, and we're all just drifting off to slumberland.
When we sleep, we can connect our dreams together via the Helix Wi-Fi. It's the best.
We do. So, you know, when I have my Event Horizon horror dreams, I drag MT into hell with me.
Yes.
We both have barbed wire wrapped around our faces. That's thanks, literally Helix. The recurring dream I've had for the past few days.
Oh,
it's awful.
Really? Oh, but, God.
Yep. But MT, when we get the right kind of sleep on a Helix mattress, those dreams don't last very long. And we wake up feeling great. So it's all worth it. The mattress ships right to your door for free. No need to go to a mattress store. Just go to helixsleep.com/insidemarvel. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but you're going to love it. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/insidemarvel. All right, MT, back to Moon Knight. What's our next question?
Well, Eric, did Khonshu cause Mark's dissociative identity disorder, or did he have DID before meeting Khonshu?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. I think the show really needs to answer. In the comics, it really goes back and forth, because initially in the 80s, Moon Knight was not at all described as someone with dissociative identity disorder or schizophrenia or anything. People didn't even use the term dissociative identity disorder back then. They called it like split personality disorder, or just like more offensive things to describe people going through issues. Really, Moon Knight was just presented as a Batman-style vigilante with lots of alter egos. Nothing more to it. But in later comics, they started to explore the mental health side of this. And then in Warren Ellis's run in the comics in 2014, at first, Mark Spector thinks he might have DID, but it's stated that that is not the case. Khonshu is just a real entity living inside of Mark's head, and outsiders see this and diagnose it as DID, but all of Mark's alter egos are really defined as machinations of Khonshu. And then in the 2016 run of the comics, it suggests that Mark actually had DID or schizophrenia or something when he was a kid, and that all those identities were also created by Khonshu, who was around him when he was a kid. But maybe Khonshu was presented as being unstuck from time and just a forever demon in Mark's destined timeline. Or maybe that could have been a false projected memory by Khonshu in Mark's adult presence. When he thinks back on those memories, he thinks back on Khonshu being there alongside him. We just don't really know.
Yeah,
but either
they purposely have made it very like ambiguous throughout time as to like what's going on with Mark, just so like whoever has the reins to who is writing Moon Knight at the time can just write whatever they want and just be as creative with the character as they want. So
right, Exactly. And in the comics, they always infuse Mark's issues with Khonshu's possession so that the two are really both owned as both a superpower and a curse, just an experience that Mark is going through. It just remains to be seen if this series is going to say Mark Spector previously had dissociative identity disorder before ever meeting Khonshu, and if so, what traumatic event in his younger days might have caused that, or if Khonshu possessing him is what caused the DID, and if so, does that mean Khonshu causes every avatar he's possessed in the past or in the future to also have DID? Or just Mark is a different, unique avatar who reacts this way to Khonshu possessing him? And if so, why that's the case? I really think at the end of the day, Khonshu possessing Mark could certainly be traumatic enough to result in DID in Mark. And we don't really know why trauma causes certain people to react by having this issue of dissociative identity disorder. But I think we need to know if Mark was unique in that side effect and what particularly about Mark's past causes that. Or if this is just something that Khonshu does to everyone. What do you think, MT? Are they going to stay nebulous about this? Or are they going to try to answer some of those questions? I think people might have some negative reactions here.
I think that, you know, if they do address the whole issue or the how, you know, the origins of Steve's DID, I think that they'll have to be very, very obviously very tactful and like approach it very like smartly. But I think that they might have to, honestly, during this series, because like they are tackling such a huge topic, and like this is the first hero. The first like major hero, I guess, that has really a mental illness. I mean, we do have WandaVision and like Wanda struggling with depression and all that, but like this is like a, you know, DID, like this is the first type of hero that we're getting like this. So like I just feel like at some point during this season we're gonna get a brain scan type of moment where like he's gonna be in a hospital and be like, all right, this is what's going on, like this is where his DID, or like or he's always had DID, or like this is where it's coming from, or something. But yeah, I think that we'll get some type of answer there.
I think it's tough. It's definitely a hard question to answer, because you don't want, you know, dummies watching the show thinking that, oh, someone who has DID between this and that James McAvoy movie Split, that means you could be one of your identities could be a superhero. So, hey, wake up in there. Is there a superhero hiding there? You should surrender control to them, because I want to hang out with them instead of with you. Like, you don't want that to be the case. Yeah. You want like this to educate people about dissociative identity disorder.
For sure.
But I think they just need to make it clear that Mark's superhero nature comes from Khonshu. The dissociative identity disorder is a psychological side effect from that. But it's not like you having DID is a kind of superhero thing. It just makes it harder to also be a superhero then. Because when you're in these situations, you don't know who's at the wheel in that moment. And you gotta have that person make the decision to surrender control to one of the other identities so that that identity can be the superhero. This isn't meant to be like a fun wish fulfillment thing. This is like a curse story and how the challenges of having to walk every day with that curse. So as unfun as watching someone be a superhero can be, because I gotta tell you, it's pretty fun to watch Moon Knight beat the shit out of a jackal in a bathroom.
Yeah, Moon Knight's a pretty fun superhero to watch, gotta say.
Yeah, but not one I would want to be at the end of the day.
Oh yeah, no, definitely not. For sure.
I mean, Hulk seems a bit more fun, or like, you know, could be Tony Stark, just fly around in a cool iron suit.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be either. I don't want to be Moon Knight or Vision. Those are the two I would not want to be. In the MCU, which is mainly Vision, mostly, but not Vision. Vision just dies.
That'd be tough. I mean, that's something that I hope we explore more in the MCU, with the how being a superhero isn't wish fulfillment. It kind of sucks.
Yes.
Like, it's hard to be a superhero. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't want that life.
Yeah.
So I love those kind of stories in the MCU.
And I hope that they actually get into that in Ms. Marvel, the show that's coming up, because like we have this girl that's glorifying superheroes, but like it's not all great, and like it's actually quite shitty as we see it from the audience perspective from like events like Civil War. It's not fun all the time. So yeah, I do like that.
And it's hopefully a theme I think definitely will be pursued and explored in Thor: Love and Thunder. Mm. Like that's going to be a huge choice for Jane Foster, someone who's going through cancer treatments. Right. She could power up with Mjolnir to become Lady Thor, but in the Jason Aaron comics, that resets her chemo every time she does that. So she's back to square one. And she's like, well, I can escape and be a superhero, or I can actually deal with my problems right now, fascinating debate to have with oneself that I hope this movie leans into.
Like, I love how, like, the Marvel Studios is, like, showing us, like, different heroes like that. Like, heroes with cancer, heroes with DID, heroes with deaf heroes. Like, we need more variety like that. And so I hope the MCU moves forward telling more stories like that.
Yeah. And blind heroes as well now with Daredevil.
Absolutely, Daredevil!
Fascinating story, right? Mm. Let's talk about this Golden Scarab. What do you think is this is clearly the MacGuffin of the story right now. This is our Ark of the Covenant. What is the significance, do you think, of this scarab?
Kevin Feige texted me earlier and he told me that there's something about the Cave of Wonders and a diamond in the rough. Something about that. Something about Aladdin. I think Aladdin's gonna come. Just kidding, no. That's all I could think of when I saw the scarab. I'm like, this is Aladdin. This is straight up Aladdin.
Wait, you're just kidding?
But no, I think that this scarab is going to be like the huge, obviously, like you said, the huge MacGuffin of the series. And it might just be what, you know, Arthur needs to fulfill his huge mission. And then, like, obviously they wanted enough to kill Moon Knight. And so I think that this is just going to be some type of artifact that might help him get somewhere, or like, might help, like, might be a key of some sort. Like, it might open up and, like, actually be like a key. Maybe it's a locket. Who knows? But, like, it's definitely helping him reach Amit. It's just to some capacity. I don't know. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, and I'm only basing this on trailer footage where you see a shot of Arthur Harrow in the desert with the scarab hovering over his hand.
Oh, that's right.
Kind of pointing.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of feel like it's got to be a compass leading to somewhere, some ancient tomb, some ruins that Arthur Harrow wants to get to. Maybe
the golden compass.
I mean, knowing that he mentioned wanting to unleash her or bring back Amit to resurrect her. Like, oh, brave of you for subjecting yourself to Amit's judgment before Amit comes back, before Amit is here. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think they want to bring back or resurrect Amit or unleash the beast in the
unleash
world.
Unleash the beast!
So they're going to try to find where Amit is trapped and then uncork that, I guess, to use the lost term.
Sort of like a Dweller of Darkness style. It's like, find out, just release them.
Everyone's trying to unleash these beasts. Why not just keep the beast in the cave?
Seriously, they were fine in the cave, all those for millennia.
We're trying to crate train these beasts. Let them just sleep the night in the crate and view it as their little home.
Exactly, Jesus Christ.
They like their crate. Anyway. All right, final question, MT, and this is really the biggest question I think we're going to have in this series. How much of what we are seeing is real? How much is this all a dream? Is this all a fantasy, a delusion inside someone's head?
I think that for the most part, I think what we're seeing is real. I think like during that elevator sequence when like that woman turned into Khonshu, that wasn't real. But like, you know, like it seems that he's legit, because like at the end of this episode we see the jackal attack him, but like the jackal's actually interacting with the environment and like hitting things around, and like it seems that things actually happen there. Like, I don't think that Mark is like imagining that jackal. I think that jackal is actually there. So like I think it's a mix of mostly reality, magic reality, but like some kind of like, all right, I'm kind of seeing things. But what do you think?
See, I don't know. I'd have to rewatch it, and I will for the breakdown. But like, it doesn't look like the jackal is really interacting. Like, I don't know if we see, obviously it's a CGI jackal anyway, but like, I think they shoot it in a specific way where Mark pulls down the shelves in front of it and it jumps over it. It definitely climbs on stuff.
True.
But I don't know. I don't know if it's actually ripping stuff down. And the camera cuts away from the bathroom, and then we cut back in and see all the sinks smashed, but like Mark himself could have smashed those.
Yo, like that bathroom was messed up. Oh, what is Mark going to say after that? What is Steve going to say?
Who knows? To me, you mentioned the elevator sequence. That's what I'm hung up on. This elevator is going up and down the building in chaotic ways. He was hitting ground floor, and then it goes down to the third, opens up, no one summoned it, down to the second. Khonshu's at the end of the hallway. If Khonshu is supposed to be like a stand-in for that old woman, she was at the other end of that hallway. Who summoned this elevator for it to stop on the second floor? And then it goes back up to the fifth floor.
Mm-hmm.
No one, if it was a down-oriented elevator, you know if you get on an elevator that is headed down, even if you press the button for the fifth floor, it's going to go down to the ground floor first before it goes back up. Now, yeah, maybe there's just faulty wiring in this elevator, sure. But, like, it was working otherwise to get to where it needed to go. There's just all kinds of, like, faulty logic. I also think, like, when Mark was flipping through the pages researching the Ennead, the way the Ennead was listed and the people listed as being among the Ennead is not correct. And if Mark is supposed to be an expert in Egyptian mythology, like, maybe there are other interpretations of the Egyptian mythology and I'm not as well versed on it, but it seems like even the textbook that Mark or that Stephen had used to say this is who and who isn't supposed to be listed on the Ennead, like, even that seemed to be wrong, seemed to be, like, faulty. It's like someone who has that kind of, like, who are these people who, like, who think that they're experts based off of reading, like, a Wikipedia article on something or watching one YouTube video on it. And so they'll go to their trivia night with their friends and be like, actually, I do know on this. But they have that false sense of expertise. And realistically, they don't have any degrees or any actual expertise in this stuff. But, like, in their own mind's eye, they view themselves as these experts on these things just because they've done a little bit of homework on it. Is that who we're seeing now with Stephen Grant? Is he actually a true nerd, a true expert? I mean, look at this. This show is forcing us to, like, ask the question of what makes someone's expertise true, and is someone a real nerd? It's like asking us to question who the gatekeepers are. And who gatekeeps the gatekeepers, MT?
No, but no, like, this all is, like, really interesting because, like, it makes me think, like, what if humanity, because of, like, whoever's in charge of the Ennead or Ennead, I don't know how to say it. How do you say it? Ennead? Ennead?
Ennead, I think.
Ennead. Yeah, so, like, what if whoever's in charge of the Ennead is feeding people, like, all right, here's the true Ennead after, like, I don't know, some fallout happened between the gods and, like, two gods got kicked out. And so, like, everyone except for Mark, who has Khonshu in his head, believes that there are seven. So, like, I'm wondering if something happened.
Wow, there's, like, some kind of mass gaslighting. It's either Sprite going in there, like, changing, like, Ministry of Truthing everything so that everything prints out in a different way. Or it's, like, Runes of Koth calling all of society.
Exactly.
So that we all forget who really is on the Ennead.
Exactly.
Whoa, MT, you just blew my mind right now.
That would be wild.
What I love about the show is it's presenting to us, like, an uncertainty of time and an uncertainty of reality. Like, Mark has no idea how much time has passed. I keep saying Mark, but Stephen has no idea how much time has passed over the weekend. Man, you know someone's going to turn that into a meme of, like, it's Sunday. Oh, no. No.
Yeah, it can't be Sunday.
No Sunday. Oh, no.
I was supposed to get laid today. It was on my calendar.
But, like, yeah, I think, like, the fact that Mark or Stephen never really knows what day of the week it is, we don't know how much time has passed, but we also don't know what reality, what the basic tenets of reality are right now, whether our fish has a fin that works or not. Like, this show has us questioning all that stuff, so that we're kind of trapped in this unreliable narrator headspace, like we're watching Fight Club, or like we're watching Memento, or like we're watching Joker. We can't really trust basic things, not just stuff that's presented to be fictitious or meant to be fantastical, like seeing Khonshu standing on the side of the street. Even basic stuff like what you read on the page of a book, can we really trust that right now? And it's such a delightful place of uncertainty to be in as we plunge into the series.
Yes.
I hope everyone can appreciate those little subtleties.
I love a good mystery.
Question everything in this show. Because I think this is the kind of show that's going to turn everything on its head, episode after episode. And we'll leave it there for this episode of Inside Marvel. The breakdown is coming out later today. It's exciting. Don't forget, of course, to check out all the great merch options at newrockstarsmerch.com. That limited edition, latest obsession Moon Knight shirt. Really, the best way to support this channel. And then write in your shout out. So we'll react.
We want to read them. We want to read them so bad.
We want to know. Follow me at EA Boss. Follow MT Mastertainment. Subscribe to Inside Marvel wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to New Rock Stars. Thanks for watching. Later, gators.
Later, gators.
Later, gators. Later, gators.
Goodbye, Mom.
Goodbye, Mom.